of superhero stories are about transformation, and Steve Rogers is no different. His entire arc banks on this massive change he goes through, and there's extreme physical evidence to remind us of how much he's changed. I think it's really interesting to look at what changes we see in pre-serum and post-serum Steve, and how then we as fandom reflect that in Fix. The first thing we see of Steve in the movies is his determination, but also his frustration. And I think that there's a shift, a definite shift from the beginning of his story to the end of his story, from anger to sadness, that I feel like fundamentally underlines his process.
There's also a real shift in his bangs. Which we don't talk enough about the floppy bangs.
Oh, the way he like really brushes.
Weird, like over gelled situation we all had to live through in Endgame. Yeah.
They make a thing out of him brushing them aside in TFA when he's little.
I know. I wish they had kept that.
Yeah, but then they get too short and it grows out long. And
it's a whole thing.
It's a whole thing.
So what do you mean by... like what do you mean by kind of anger and frustration to like, I mean, obviously one of the very first things we see about him is Bucky having to rescue him in an alley.
Yeah.
And then at the end, of course, we kind of see him as this leader, and that's the whole thing throughout it. And so that's one of his journeys as well, from, you know, from being somebody who was an army of one to being the leader of a much larger army. So, but what do you mean when you say that, the determination, frustration, and his journey?
Well, I kind of see Steve's story as being almost an allegory for growing up. Like, not just, we sort of talked about Peter being representative of adolescence in the Kidfic episode, and how that it kind of encapsulates a moment and experience. But for Steve, we sort of see a whole arc that I think can fit quite well with the change in an emotional connection to faith and passion and conviction that a lot of people go through as they develop and as they get older. So we see in small Steve, he's determined, he's frustrated by his limitations, and he's got a lot of anger. And some of that anger is from feeling like he's being prevented from being what he wants to be, because of his size or his health, or, you know, we can extend that to how a child is frustrated that they can't vote yet, they don't have a say, that kind of thing. And Steve goes through this development process, and it isn't just the serum that changes things for him, but the ice as well. And when we see him several movies down the line, I think he has developed a nuance, a sense of nuance, and an understanding of the complexity of the things that he wants to accomplish that draw that shift from that sort of fierce determination to a more complex sadness, a weariness in later movies.
I mean, I always think of Steve Rogers as a man who exists in grief.
Yeah.
And he understands, I think we write him a lot as that. So like, if we just kind of take that for a minute and think about how we write small Steve in canon, often he's with Bucky, obviously, because that's canon, but it's much more of a spitfire.
Yeah.
Much more, you know, a lot of wartime Stucky fix have a lot of the social justice element, obviously. And a lot of, I mean, one of the major themes in the fix that I read anyway, and I'm sure there's others that don't do this, but like Bucky has to protect him in a certain way because Steve's like,
yeah,
Steve's about to die in an alley, either from early onset emphysema or somebody's fists. And that, you know, and that Steve rescues Bucky right back just emotionally in a different way.
Yeah.
But that kind of just spitfire, like he's a powder keg about to explode at any given moment. And then I think there's a period, like we don't really get it in TFA. Like you and I were talking offline a little bit about how we really wish that we would have spent a little bit more time between serum and ice.
Yeah. I want more of what that was like.
Yeah. And even like ice, between ice and the like Chitauri, like I want more of that first year too.
Yeah.
that we ever got, and kind of what those first couple weeks, and what does that all mean, and how does that all work like? Because, you know, the idea that Steve Rogers has PTSD, like, we are not the first people to say that. That's yeah. We're not smart in that way. Like, that's really obvious. But he just, like, he's power, like, I don't know. I just think of him as resigned to adulthood.
Yeah, the thing you say about Bucky protecting him, I think also is when he's young and small and inexperienced and also inundated in the black-white propaganda of the time and about America, he thinks that, you know, his desire, his passion is to protect people. And he thinks that at that point that protecting people is as simple as standing between the bullet and the victim, and that he can be that person in the middle, even if it means sacrificing himself. But what he starts to learn when he's older and seeing the other Avengers and having a relationship, I mean, you know, a relationship as much as we want it to be more, you know what I mean by that, with Tony in canon. And also being part of an organization like S.H.I.E.L.D. and seeing and being let down by that, the grief he goes through, and the very specific grief of losing someone the way he lost Peggy instead of losing someone the way he lost his parents, or his mother at least, is, I think, the shift that we see him go through is realizing that it's not as simple as he was driven by when he was younger, and also that protecting people is a lot more, and it's a lot more complex than just standing between them and the bullet, and that the sacrifice you end up making is often a lot more difficult than just being willing to be shot.
Yeah. I mean, we're recording this the week that Hamilton starts streaming. And so it's not abnormal for me to compare everything to Hamilton. But in particular, I've been thinking a lot about Hamilton. And for me, if I was ever going to do a Hamilton AU, for me, like, Hamilton is Steve.
Right.
And this desperate guy who wrote in Alexander Hamilton's life, he was orphaned and he wrote his way from an impoverished Caribbean island to the United States and became a major player in American history. And Steve was an impoverished orphan who committed fraud and some crimes and changed the world in his fictional setting. But when I think about those, like you mentioned, the black and white propaganda, I don't think we can separate those things. Like, so when we meet Steve Rogers, he's an orphan who has found family in Bucky, and his this emotional identity in the idea of being a soldier, like you said, standing between the bullet and the person. And in the 1930s, that was between the Nazis and the rest of the United States. And it was that clear cut for a lot of people. And I think that's why it's so significant when Erskine says to Steve that Steve is a good man. I literally don't think he ever considered what a good man would be, and that he would be one. Because a good man in the 1940s, 1930s, 1920s, it's so culturally caught up in providing. It's caught up in working, it's caught up in physical strength, it's caught up in heteronormativity, and then by the time we get into TFA, it's caught up in going to war. So how could he be a good man if he wasn't any of those things? And so then, you know, he meets Phillips, and he meets Erskine, and he meets all these other people, and I'm sure he knew dudes in the tenements and like all that. I'm not trying to say that he was this in a bubble. But I have a feeling, I mean, this is part of the adolescent id. Like, as you grow up and you start to see yourself in other people and other people in yourself, you kind of go with that. Yeah. But then he wakes up, I should say this. I think that idea of the cultural trappings of a good man is one of the reasons that Peggy is so attractive to him. I firmly believe that, obviously, that he and Bucky fucked in a tent. All throughout the war and in the, I mean, like, OVS. But if we're just talking about canon, I think he's particularly attracted to Peggy Carter because she is not only the only woman in TFA, because God forbid we cast women in superhero movies, but she represents the cultural norm of exactly what a good man would look like.
Yeah.
And he knows how to be that. So then he wakes up in 2012. Not only have we, as the United States, pretty much punched holes in propaganda and figured out that everything's pretty complicated, whether we realize it or not, but he's woken up and there's Twitter now. And we've been in Iraq in a war that, you know, is potentially illegal and people potentially, you know, are going to go on trial for war crimes. Like, all of this is really complicated. And then he meets Fury and Clint and Tony and Thor and all of these other men who continue to complicate what manhood is for him.
Yeah. If we take that moment of the transformation from the serum and somewhat equate it to puberty, or, you know, he gets the thing he was lacking before. He now has the freedom of being healthy and strong and yep. physically what he felt was holding him back before, and much in the way that a child released into the world at 18 suddenly is, you know, they have financial freedom. They can go to the grocery store at 2 a.m. and buy a cake if they want. And the like depressing truth of adulthood is learning that the things you thought would be easier, some of them may be easier, but the number of new things you have that are harder certainly doesn't outweigh it. And I think that there's a parallel there too for Steve, watching him discover that he has this new strength and this new opportunity and a new voice, and it's not as easy as it felt like it would be.
Yeah, like he finally got everything he thought he was supposed to have and it would be fine, and now, oh shit.
Because it's actually the case that those kinds of things we crave let us see behind the curtains that prove that nothing is that simple.
Yeah. Like, I remember when I was younger thinking that it, like, I wanted a job where I would have like a key to the building, or like I wanted to be that important, right? Like, I wanted that kind of responsibility, and now I own the company, I have the key to the building, and there's a lot of dates I'd give it up.
Oh yeah, I know, same
like
with me.
In a heartbeat. I know you feel the same way, where it's like, yeah, I really would love a day where like someone else makes decisions for me.
Yeah.
Because it just gets overwhelming. And I think when we see the arc of the MCU in particular, and I can't speak to the comics at all, as we all know. So when we're talking canon, obviously in this one, we're obviously just talking MCU because I can't follow you into alts.
I mean, it's also interesting, just as a side note, that in the MCU, they made him small, like short and narrow, like small overall. And in 616 and alts, and presumably a lot of the other comic canons, he's like, he's still ill, but he's very tall and gangly. He's kind of like a beanpole type body type. So he doesn't get taller from the serum. He just like gains muscle mass, and then it fixes his health problems. And it's curious that the MCU decided to make him petite.
He's snack sized.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we'll put a pin in that because I want to talk about how we talk about that in AUs for a minute. But before we lose, like canon fix and how we treat him in canon.
Yeah.
I think it's really an important element that we deal with this idea that he is existing in waves of grief.
Yeah.
Like you said, like he loses, like losing Peggy, the way he loses him, the way he loses her, is so completely different than burying a peer. Yet Peggy is a peer. Yet, like, I just think of how many little griefs he goes through on a daily basis in the first couple movies.
Yeah. And I think that, like, obviously she's his ex-partner and not a parent, but like the way that he loses her is similar to the way that a lot of us start to lose our parents when we push past 30, 35.
Yeah.
And it's like he's had to say goodbye to her many, many times. And that feeling of, you know, I mean, they call Alzheimer's the long goodbye. And I think that even with a parent who doesn't have some version of dementia, that's still, when you see them aging and failing, it feels like the beginning of that long goodbye. And I think that he has to have that relationship with the grief that he has for losing her. Whereas the sudden loss of someone is an entirely different grieving process.
Yeah. And so one of the things obviously we can do in fic is explore all these things that the MCU didn't explore. Like, was it weird for him to be in a team all of a sudden with the Avengers when the last team he was with the Howleys? You know, how does he feel about like plentiful running water? These are questions.
Microwaves. I love a good Steve versus a microwave fic.
I love Steve Rogers versus the 21st century. Not because I think he's an idiot. I don't love the ones where he's like a total Muppet at it all.
Yeah.
But I do really love the like moment of shit. What's TikTok?
Yeah.
Excuse me.
One of my favorite times I explored that was I had them watching Star Trek, and then he decided to use his own microwave for the first time. And like, he'd just been watching Star Trek and they were all kind of like, yeah, it was how they thought the future would be. So he's kind of like, okay, like how much of that is he absorbing and processing and trying to strategize with? So he sees the popcorn button on the microwave and thinks that perhaps it makes popcorn appear inside it. Like, that seems like a fairly logical conclusion. Yep. To make. Yep. So he just like sort of pushes the button to see what happens, and Jarvis is like, he probably shouldn't run that when it's empty. And he's like, oh yeah, I knew. I was just like, you know, sure, I knew that.
Oh, I knew that, Jarvis. I totally
I wasn't that. Expecting popcorn to appear. I just, you know, I was just goofing around.
Yeah. I know. And then of course he doesn't just land in a house, he lands in Tony
Stark's house. I know.
Good Lord. I mean, I just I just wrote a fic very recently where Steve is fighting with all of the smart technology that doesn't actually make anything easier.
Yeah.
He's like, I just want to do an oven. And Tony's like, well, you talk to it and you tell it. And Steve's like, can I just turn a dial? Like, yeah, please, can I just turn a dial?
Why are we here?
Yeah. So those fics are all really fun. And I love fics, both Stucky and Stuckoni and all iterations. I love Nat and I love Sam and Steve fics that talk about this, where canon adjacent and canon stories give Steve room to breathe that grief.
Yeah.
And as much as I love a good 2012 fluff fest, like the rest of us, I really love ones where the author allows him to sit in that. It's not a joke that I don't know what to do. This is really shitty and kind of weird.
Yeah.
And this is hard and awkward and also joyful. And like, yeah, I think penicillin's a really great thing, but like also all your bananas taste wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's,
and I don't know what to do with this cross-cultural different thing. This different thing, but then go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, he didn't move places. He's exactly where he was. And it's like some of the most brutal culture shock to have to adjust. Like, you know, he's still in New York, but this is not his New York.
Yeah, it's like the worst coming of age story where you have to go back home. It's like the worst Hallmark movie where like you have to move back home because the Christmas tree farm is about to go under.
Yeah.
He, you know, all that. But because it is fandom, we really do love shoving him in non-canon situations as well.
And it's like we've got so much flexibility with Steve because there's so many different Steves that we can choose from to put in AUs. And I mean, I fucking love putting him in as Small Steve.
I do too. We just, in fact, had a Small Steve bingo event on the POT server that we'll make sure to link to the collection in the show notes, where I got to write Small Steve as a kindergarten teacher who was small in, like, he was petite in stature, but not in personality. And then I've also written him recently as like that beanpole that you talk about him in the comics. I think, in fact, one of the, like, when Tony's yelling at him, he calls him an obtuse string bean. But I also love in AUs where people still kind of like, sure, he's not, maybe he doesn't have asthma, but they keep that he has hearing problems. Or like, oh, I did never get a serum. I just grew up and I grew out of my childhood asthma, but I'm still completely colorblind and I need Coke bottle glasses. Like, I really love those kind of fics. Like, I love fics in which Steve doesn't look like he's in the serum as much as I love serum fics too.
We also like the changes in medicine mean that some of, like, because, you know, he was really sick.
Yeah.
And the changes in medicine let us kind of like fiddle with how sick we want him to be in an AU. So yeah, there's like some freedom to play there.
Yeah. Like I don't remember this, but I went like where I found it. So don't ask me to link to it, but like a couple fix where he had diabetes and that was really fascinating and how that was handled in the 1920s and 30s versus the 2010s and everything else. So, but yeah, I love putting him in things. Obviously we both write AUs either as much or more than canon, depending on the season we're in our writing schedules.
Yeah.
But I mean, I write mostly AUs these days. I
oscillate wildly. So all my AUs feel like they're canon based anyway, because I always try and pick and pull as much as I can. So I find myself rewatching the movies for little tidbits more often with AUs than with anything else.
Well, that's fascinating. Yeah, I famously do not rewatch the movies all that often. So I just create.
I keep the scripts open a lot, and I will search for certain words in the scripts to like find places where things happened and like quote things accurately and drop in little tidbits that are like one line from the movie put in an AU to like remind people that it's a Marvel fic. I don't know. I like to make mine as hard to file the serial numbers off as possible so that I could never ever make money writing. That's my goal.
Okay.
It's working out real good for me.
Whatever you need to do, dear. But I think when we think about the differences, like I was just thinking about our two most recent long fics that we both published and how different the Steves are in them.
Right.
Your most recent long fic, as we're recording this, is Two Point Perspective.
Yep.
And mine is While You Were Sleeping. And mine has Steve, who is not, I mean, he's just an adult male built like Evans without the captain diet, like just built like Evans in Defending Jacob. And he's got his shit together.
Yeah.
And like life has been really hard for him. And he has, I mean, I have him as it's a crossover with Knives Out. So he's also a functional orphan because he left that family. But he's got his shit together and he found family and it's all great. And Two Point Perspective is completely different.
Yeah. He's tiny Omega Steve with health issues, absolute poverty, no agency or control over his life whatsoever. He's very angry and he's very frustrated and does not trust the world to ever give him nice things. And the cool thing about Steve's arc is that those are both valid canon Steves that we can have because that's the development that he's gone through.
Yeah, and it's a little bit different than Tony or even Bucky, who are the other two characters that we write primarily.
Yeah.
Tony is very, like, he was a wild child and then he went to Afghanistan and whatever. Like, the arc, we all kind of pick different places. And usually if Tony's always had heart surgery of some fashion, or he has the arc reactor, or like we all as writers kind of pull from the whole of Tony's arc, or the like way more than we pull from the whole of Steve's. Like we tend to pull chunks of Steve's.
Like Tony is the sum of his parts and Steve, we choose parts.
Correct. That's a much more eloquent way to say what I was stumbling through. Good job.
Thanks. So, I'm here to summarize for you, except I will not write summaries for your fix. Sorry.
No, I write summaries for our fix. That's how this goes. So it's fascinating that he's so disparate in some ways. And it's, of course, we do that with Bucky because of the trauma. So it's a trauma conversation that's completely different than Tony's, which is also fascinating to me.
Yeah. Cause it's not like, they've each got their traumas, but yeah, Steve really has these like divider lines, these real, and I think even if we look at Tony, like pre-Afghanistan and post-Afghanistan, it's not, you know, it's not as severe a bookend as it is for Steve.
No, because he's dying from palladium poisoning and still being an idiot.
Yeah, like there's all these carry-throughs he really, not to say he doesn't learn from anything, but like.
His growth feels more, to a certain extent too, if we're gonna talk about the adolescent kind of thing, when we meet Tony, he's been through puberty.
Very much an adult, yeah.
He's an adult. He's an adult asshole, but he's an adult. I don't think Tony's ever an asshole. But he's never that kind of like walking id.
Yeah. And Steve's very concentrated when he's small.
Yeah.
And it's a big, Yeah, I mean, even just like, I think Tony's agency over his decision to transform into Iron Man, and it, the way it's a part of him, but it's not always a part of him. Like, he's even got choices about the arc reactor, and he eventually chooses to take it out and that kind of thing. And Steve doesn't really have the context to consent to what happens to him. Like,
no, oh my gosh, no.
So, and you know, he's got the, it's been driven into him that this is what he has to do to be a good person. And so everything that are his big bookend moments seem to be very much things that happened to him. And I mean, I guess you could say in some ways he had agency over the ice, but even still, he expected to die. He was committing suicide. He was not time traveling.
Yeah.
So that, you know, even his martyrdom is taken away from him.
Yeah, it's like that deleted scene from Endgame where Rhodey's like, why didn't you just jump out of the plane? Which is a question I think we've all asked at different points, but the answer is that he didn't want to survive. Like, he was quite fine being done.
Yeah, and the truth is, I think if he jumped out of a plane, landed in the fucking ocean, he probably would have gone through exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and I mean, that's, again, it's like, it's the serum that saves him. And while we could say technically he had a choice to do that, he didn't understand. Nobody understood what the serum was actually going to change. No one was like, oh, by the way, if you crash a plane into the Atlantic Ocean, you'll be, you know, healthily frozen for 70 years. Like, that wasn't one of the things they tested before they gave him the serum. So whereas Tony, you know, he builds his new body piece by piece. And I think that is a fundamental part. Like, it's not just a reflection of the story that Marvel is telling us, but when we approach them as characters we're trying to recreate, it's a really fundamental difference between how they relate to the world and their superhero-ness.
Yeah.
And just a little side helping of math here. I had a peek because I was curious to see how popular small serum, I've been saying that all day, pre-serum Steve is. If we look in the Steve Tony tag, which has 36,000 works, almost 37,000 works overall, there are 642 that are tagged pre-serum Steve. And that canonical tag is going to contain small Steve as well, I'm fairly sure. So that's actually, like, I would say that that's a fairly small amount in the Stony fandom. Not a super hugely popular amount. It's less than the number of BDSM AUs we found, if I recall correctly. I think that was in the 800s.
Oh, yeah, it was closer to 9. Yeah. I'm sure in the Stucky fandom, it's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, so in MCU tag as a whole, we have 6,341 that are tagged pre-serum Steve. And in the Stucky specifically, we have 5,135.
Well, we see where that goes.
So the vast majority of pre-serum Steve fics are written for Stucky, or at least fics that are tagged Stucky and may also have other tags. But
we also have a wild Tony in there.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But if they were tagged Stony, they'd appear in the other one too. So
that's true.
It's, you know, it's a solid 10 times as many. So I think, I mean, obviously a big part of that is that quite literally Small Steve and Bucky have contact,
yeah,
which is not the case. And so in order to put Tony and Small Steve together, you either need to be in an AU or you have to do something to make that happen. I have seen, I'll link to this art if I can find it, really cool AU where, and I don't know, you know, there's recently been either spawned from that or also inspired by the idea of Steve getting the serum and it giving him all of his super skills. Like, he's got the strength and the speed and the agility and all of that, and it solves his health problems, but it doesn't change the way he physically appears to other people. So he's still Small Steve in appearance, but he has that strength, so it is more like a magical strength.
Is it Copper Badge wrote like Tiny?
Yeah, Copper Badge wrote like the Tiny Spy Assassin Steve and stuff like that, but this is an art series where the artist has recreated scenes from the MCU, but drawn them with Small Steve doing the same things that Big Steve did in the movies.
Ooh.
So there's like the helicopter scene, but it's Small Steve, but he's still holding back a helicopter, that kind of thing.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's a Stucky twist to it. But yeah, I'll dig that up and I'll put that in the show notes because I think that art is really cool. And I think that concept is really cool and one that could lead to more pre-serum Stony fix, maybe.
Yeah.
but, and I, people have definitely explored it a couple of times, but that art really spoke to me, and I think it's a really cool idea.
Yeah. In the same way that I love this, like one of the ideas floating around that Steve wore the gauntlet in Endgame and it, and the spear was drained. And so he becomes small Steve as he and Tony live happily ever after.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the idea of like, I mean, in Guardians of the Galaxy, they set us up for the idea that the power of a Power Stone can be shared and like distributed amongst people and therefore diluted for each person.
Yeah.
So this idea that if they both held the glove, Steve might have lost some of his superpowers and Tony might have, you know, maybe lost the use of his arm or something. But all in all, by sharing it, they could win. That's another canon divergence I like to see.
Yeah. And another rant we can go on for another day.
Yeah.
Well. I think what is so fascinating about our Steve as we celebrate his very birthday, as you all listen to this, it will be the day after he will be 104 years old. But the beauty of Steve Rogers is that even though he is this elastic character that is driven by different things at different times, fundamentally, throughout all the iterations of him, he wants to do his best. And he has a for better or worse, and in certainly in Stony Fix, we play a lot with his kind of pining and martyrdom, and I think we do in Stucky as well. And I think in Sam Steve, we see this somewhat as well. And I don't read as many other Steve ships than those three. But this idea that he just wants to do his best, and he just wants to be good. And there's a real beauty and purity in that, that is one of the reasons that he serves as such a good foil to so many other characters in comics. So the best way I think that we know how to say happy birthday to him is not only with this past conversation, but now we're going to turn over a little bit of time to hear what you all love about Steve so that we can continue celebrating our very, very favorite Stephen G. Rogers.